Today's Shiur in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Bava Kama Daf Pei Tes. We continue to learn for the success of Chayilei Tzvos, Haganah Yisrael, all the Kochas of Bitachon. They should be successful in everything that they do. They should have zero casualties. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should watch over them. They should bring back the Chatufim, B'mheira, in good health. And there should be Shalom Al Yisrael. Okay, we pick up on Pei Tes, Omer Aleph, about 9 lines from the top, with the words, Omer Abai. In yesterday's shiur, we had discussed the concept of tovas hanah in regards to ksuba. When a woman wants to sell certain rights in her ksuba to somebody else, so there's no guarantee that she would ever collect the ksuba, so she only sells what we call tovas hanah. This is a risk. You're buying it on a chance, somebody that she would purchase her ksuba, that if she were to predecease her husband, so then the ksuba is worth zero. The husband keeps everything. But if her husband were to pass away before her, or her husband were to divorce her, so then she would be entitled to the ksuba. So therefore she can sell this right to someone, and this is called tovas hanah. So Abaye tells us, again, 9 lines from the top, peites amon aleph, amar Abaye, tovas hanah, we discussed at the end of yesterday, shared this concept of tovas hanah, so ho, we also lead on, since we've discussed this, really has nothing to do so much with our mesechta right now, but since we started to discuss this, I'll tell you another halacha about tovas hanah, and that is tovas hanah leisha havya. This din of tovas hanah, who gets this money? It goes to the woman herself. When she goes and sells the rights to her ksuba to somebody else, so she gets to keep that money. It doesn't go to her husband. Normally, when a woman earns money, if that's the halachic relationship that they have, it was all done to protect the woman, who in those days did not really have many sources of income other than maybe a little bit of sewing or things like that that she could do in her house, so her husband had to support her. So quid pro quo, the ma'aseh yadeh, whatever she earned went to her husband, and her husband supported her. Now, she had the right to say, I don't want that. I make more money than you. I make more money than you give me. I'll keep my money, and you keep your money. So she has the right to do that. But in general, women didn't do that. So whenever the woman would get something, so it automatically would go to her husband, because he was supporting her, so he would be entitled to a ma'aseh yadeh, he would be entitled to a yerusha that she got, who would be entitled to findings that she had, and that was all because of Shalom Bayis, because he's supporting her. If he didn't get entitled to those things, so it would lead to katat, would lead to fighting in the house. Now, these things still belong to the woman, and they're treated as nichse malug. So therefore, what normally would happen, let's say she got a yerusha, so that money that would come in would belong to her, but they would use that money to go and buy, let's say, a field, and the husband would enjoy the rights to the fruits of the field. He would have the peiros. He would have the, as we call it, the usufruction rights to that field. And the base field would belong to her. The guf would belong to her. So in this situation, Abaye is telling us that the money goes to her, the tovas hanah leisha havya. And in fact, as we'll see in a moment, she doesn't even have to go and buy a field with it and let the husband use the payros. That money just stays with her 100%. In addition, Abaye tells us now, tovas hanah leisha havya, because disa kudaitich lebal havya, because he proves that this is so. Because if you say that this money were to go to the baal, so then, leimru lo edim, in the case that we had yesterday about the witnesses that declared that she was a divorced woman, and then other witnesses came along and said, no, Imanuel Yisem, you're lying. At the time that you're saying that the divorce occurred, you were actually with us someplace else. There's no way you could have testified about that. So then we said that they have to pay the woman what they tried to cause her to lose, kasher zomim lasos, and they tried to cause her to lose the ksuba. But again, it's only the tovas hanah of the ksuba. So if this were true, that it went to the husband and it didn't go to her, so then leimru lo edim, the edim then should be able to say to her, my asidinoch, what did we cause you to lose? After all of this money that you get, it goes to your husband. Yihavis mizvantalo the tovas hanah, even if you'd sold the ksuba for tovas hanah, baal havishokuminoch, the husband would take it from you. He would be entitled to it. And therefore, obviously, it must be, Abaye says, that the money belongs to her and not to her husband. However, this proof is rejected by Rav Shalman. Amar Rav Shalman, the Gemara in Brachos tells us that Rav Shalman was known as Rav Shalman because he made peace between the different shittos. He would sometimes come to reconcile the shittos. In any event, Amar Rav Shalman, Mishum Di'iko Revach Beisa, no, it still would be worth something because there's more money in the house. So it would be worthwhile for this woman. Even if the money went to her husband, it still would be something that would be valuable. And therefore, the din of tovas hanah can't be proven that it goes to her. It could even go to her husband, but she would still benefit because revach besa. There'd be more money in the house. The husband would be more generous. There would be less concern about money if this money was brought in and given to the husband in any event. So you can't prove from here that the money goes to her and not to the husband. Rava also comes along and passes like Abaye. Oh, Rava Hilchos Tovas and Olisha. He says that the woman gets this money, and here he points out what I said before: the Ein Habal Ochel Aperos, and you don't even take this money and buy a field and let the husband go and eat the fruits of that field. Why? Why not? We normally do that. My timer. So this is a takana of the Chachamim that the husband normally gets to enjoy the usufruction rights when she inherits something, for example. So here, the rabbis didn't make such a takana. My taima, why not? Because peira takinu le rabbanan. Peira, the peira lo takinu le rabbanan. They only did it for, so to say, a certain type of income that came in. So let's say she got a Yerusha, so they would go and take that Yerusha, buy a field with it, and the husband would have the use of fraction rights, but she would retain the guf hakarka. However, in this situation where the ksuba was already one specific thing, and there she got tovas hanah from it, and then if she were to sell that tovas hanah, so then the rabbis were not masakin peira de peira in this situation. Okay. And the Gemara continues, Ki also Rav Papa, Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Yeshua, mibei Rav. When Rav Papa and Rav Huna, who was the son of Rav Yeshua, came back from the Beis Medrash, mibei Rav is a generic term for the Beis Medrash, or it could mean from Rav's Beis Medrash itself. So Amrei, Tanina, they said, we learned the Takonas Usha from our Mishnah. So we could show that the Takana of Usha is actually able to be seen from our Mishnah. The Mishnah on Daf Pei Zayin, where it said over there, that if you have a litigation with a Eved Kenani or a woman, you're not going to come out well, because hachovu ben chayiv, you have to pay them if you damage them. However, v'heim shechovu b'yachayrim b'turim, but when they cause damage, since they have no money, so therefore they're not going to be able to go and pay for the person that they damaged, whatever damages they did, and therefore your pigiyosin is ra. It's a bad situation to be in, because you pay them, but they don't pay you. Now, here's where they wanted to prove takanas usha from our Mishnah. V'soka daitach lesser le takanas usha. And if you say there is no such thing as takanas usha, again, what was takanas usha? Takanas usha was that even though the woman is able to go and sell her property, she owns the guf of the karka, and therefore she's able to go and sell that, albeit the husband still will enjoy the usufruction rights until the marriage ends, but since she's able to go and sell that property, she has the halachic right to do so, and only Takanas Usha came along and said, no, the husband will be upset knowing that his wife has sold this property. He normally would inherit this property if his wife were to pass away first, and therefore this would lead to lack of shalom bayis, and therefore the rabbis instituted this Takanas Usha, that the woman cannot go and sell something which she normally would have the rights to go and sell. And that is called Takanas Usha, that she cannot go and sell the guf hakarka. It would belong to the husband, even though she has the right to go and sell it. Now, and you say there is no such takana, so then, why do we say that the woman has no money? Taz bin nichsei melug, let her go and sell her nichsei melug, and since if there is no takana susha, she is allowed to go and sell that, so she'll sell it for a certain value, because the guy can't use it right now, he'll only get it upon the death of the husband, and therefore it will be sold at a decreased value, but let her go and sell that. Taz bin nichsei melug v'titinle, and go and give it to the guy that she damaged. Oh, for the fact that our Mishnah didn't say that, it must be that there is this takanas usha. However, one says not necessarily so. Will tamech, because according to this, nihi nami, the isil takanas usha, even if you want to say that there is a takanas usha, v'lo motzi mezabni legame, and therefore she can't sell everything entirely, nevertheless, at least go and sell it. Tazbil and Nilsim look with Tovas Hanah, the Titilay. So then go and sell it with this Tovas Hanah. Granted, is a chance over here that the guy will never get it. Because if she dies first, so then it belongs to her husband. No, but maybe the husband will die first, or the husband will divorce her, and then it would go to her, and then the sale would be valid. Now, since you could have done that, must it be, since the Mishnah didn't mention that possibility, even if there is that kind of susha, Ella, it must be that we're dealing with a woman, Ella de Lesla. She doesn't have any nechse melug. And that's why the Mishnah says that it's bad, kiosun raw, because she has no money. It was talking about a woman that doesn't have nechse melug. But Itaka, right, if the woman did have nechse melug, so then she would have to go and sell that tova sana, and it would go to her, the person that she damaged. So hochanami de Lesla. So therefore, it must be talking about that she didn't have any nichsei melug, and that's why you can't bring a raya about takanas usha from our Mishnah. Gemara says, well, nevertheless, usazabing subaso betovas and obesitinlai. So wait a second, even if she doesn't have any nichsei melug, there's the base kasuba, the 200 for a besula, the 100 for a almana. So in that situation, so why don't we say usisabin ksubasa bitovas hanova sitin lei? So if she were to die first, it would be worth nothing. The husband doesn't have to pay that 200-100. But if the husband dies first, so then she would be entitled to the 200-100. Sell that. Every woman has that. You need to have a ksuba. So therefore, why doesn't the Mishnah suggest that the woman would be able to pay off the person that she damaged with the selling off at least of the tovas hana of her base kesuba of 200-100? That's the Gemara's question. And Gemara says, oh, it must be because the authorship of our Mishnah is Rav Meir. Hamani, Rav Meir here. Our Mishnah is authored by Rav Meir, and Rav Meir is of the opinion, the Amar also lo liyodam, shiyashe es ishto, afilu sho achas below ksuba. Rav Meir is of the opinion that a man is not to live with his wife unless they have a ksuba, at least the base ksuba of 200 for a besula and 100 for an almana or a grusha. And that is because it would be very easy for him to divorce her if he didn't have a base ksuba. He gets married, he says, that's it, you're out of here. So therefore, if there is a financial penalty that he'd have to pay, he won't be so quick to divorce a woman. And therefore, either it's a din d'oraisa or it was a takana of the chachamim in order to protect the woman that the husband shouldn't just divorce her willy-nilly. So if there's a financial penalty, so he's going to think twice about divorcing her. So therefore, the authorship of our Mishnah must be Rav Meir, and that's why she can't sell off her base kesuba, because Rav Meir says that if you sell off your base kesuba, there's no kesuba, so then it's also for the husband to live with the wife. In fact, the lashon is that it's a bila znus. Gemara is elsewhere, the Mishnah elsewhere tell us that Rav Meir holds that it's considered that he's living with his wife in sin if they don't have the base kesuba. Now, the Gemara questions this and says, well, what's the reasoning behind Rav Meir? As I just said, the time of my, the reasoning behind Rav Meir is as follows. Because if there is no financial obligation if he were to divorce her, so he gets mad at her. She burned the stake. So that's it. You're out of here. For crazy reasons, the man might divorce his wife because it's no cost to him. So that's why Rav Meir instituted that if you live with your wife without the base ksuba of 200-100, so then it's considered to be bilas nus. However, in our situation over here, even if she gets rid of the 200-100 to her, but she's selling it to someone else. So if the husband divorces her, the husband doesn't get off scot-free. The husband has to pay the other guy, the one that she sold the ksuba to, either the 200 or 100. So hacha lo migarishla. So here he won't go and be so quick to divorce her, even though she doesn't have her ksuba. Because the migarishla, if he does divorce her, so asu hanoch de zavne gavu lo ksuba asu mine. Those persons that she sold it to, the person that she sold her ksuba to, so that person will go collect it. So the husband doesn't have an easy time to go and divorce her. He will have a financial liability. So even though Rav Meir says normally that if you don't have a ksuba, the base ksuba of 200 to 100 is considered bilas nus, that's only because the husband will therefore have no concern about divorcing her, and we don't want that to happen. But here the husband will have a financial concern to divorce her, and he'll have to pay the other guy. So therefore, that shouldn't apply. So again, the question is, why don't we make her sell off Tovas Anah, her base kesuba, to pay the damager, and therefore it shouldn't be Pigyosun Ra. So Gemara says, you're right. Ela Tovas Anah, Mili Ninu. This concept of Tovas Anah is just a words. It's just a concept. Umili lo mishtabde. And you can't go and force her to go and sell the rights to her ksuba based upon the person that she damaged. He doesn't have a shibut on that. The person that she damaged can't demand that she do that. Because mile lo mishtabde, because it's just words, it's just a concept over here. Let's just, what are you talking about? Why not? Alom alo. After all, mile de mizdabne de dinare nidu. You can actually sell this on the open market. If she were to go put this on sale, she'd get people bidding for it. So why can't you? Where do you get this idea? Mile lo mishtabde. Yeah, it's mile de mizdabne de dinare nidu. It's words, it's a concept, but it's a concept that you can actually sell. So therefore, we're back to our original question. Why do we say pigiyos and raw? Why do we say that the encounters with a woman is bad because she has no money to pay? After all, she can always go and sell her ksuba. So the tovas hanah, even of the basic ksuba. Someone says, you're right. However, there's another reason why you can't. El Mishum de Shmuel. It's because of what Shmuel said. What does Shmuel say? The El Mishmuel. Hamocher shtar chov luchaveiro. If a person sells a shtar chov, so a person has an IOU. Let's say he is owed money by Reuven, and he wants to sell that shtar chov. So he sells the IOU. The IOU is worth $1,000. So he sells it at a discount to somebody for $500. So hamocher shtar luchaveiro. So that's a valid sale. However, what happens if the guy then says, you know what, I'm going to be moichel him on the $1,000 that he owes me. V'chazar u'mecholo, he then goes and is mochel that obligation. Guess what? That IOU is now uncollectible. Mochel, it is considered, in fact, as if it was forgiven, it's machu. And guess what? The guy that he sold it to for $500 can't go collect with it. No, the Gemara elsewhere discusses. So he owes the other guy $500. He'll have to go make that up or not. That's a whole separate machlokas. But in any event, the bottom line is, Shmuel said that since this woman could be mochel her ksuba, so therefore the person who she's selling it to really doesn't get anything, and therefore we don't allow this. And the din is, by the way, v'afilu yorish mochel. Even in the situation where the person who owns the, who originally had the IOU dies, so his yorshim inherit the right to be mochel on that debt. So therefore we don't do this. And that's the reasoning of Shmuel. Where it says, no, Amre zabune zabin v'sitile. So, no, let her go and still sell this. So she'll sell her ksuba, the base ksuba, and if she goes in his mochel, so she goes in mochel. V'mochel le'ligabi bal timchala. So then it would be mochel. But it's only a sotek will should be mochel. And here it's a vaday that she owes this guy damage, that she damaged him. So therefore, let her go sell the ksuba to somebody else. He'll pay for the Tovas Hanoah, the ksuba, we'll pay $50 for the Tovas Hanoah, and the chance that they'll go collect the 100 or 200 zuz eventually, and no, so she'll take the $50 that she sells it and go pay the damage of the $50 that she did to the damager. No, if she's eventually mochel that, so the guy will be out, the $50 that he paid. But if not, so then everybody's happy. So Gemara says, no. I mean, Gemara says, kol legabe bal vaday mochlalei. This is not a question, would she be moichla to her husband? She'd rather her husband not have to pay that guy the $50, let her husband keep the money, and therefore she definitely would be moichla. And therefore, what would we have done if we allowed this? V'afsidine, we would have caused the lost, lahau zovina, to the one who purchased it from her, biodayim. We actually caused that. And therefore, lo afsidine, we don't want to do that. And therefore, we don't allow this. So technically, yes, she could go and sell it to somebody, but since she would be certainly moichla, so therefore, all we would be doing would be causing a loss to the person who purchased it from her. No, maybe he would eventually be able to go take her to court, but that would be a big problem. And therefore, why would we want to do and cause this person a loss? And that's why we don't sell the Tovas Hanoah. No, the word says, V'chitema zabino nihale lahu d'chavla bay b'tovas Hanoah. Wait a second. Go and have her sell the ksuba, give the rights to the ksuba. She doesn't actually sell it to him. She damaged the guy $50. So she should go and give him the rights to a ksuba for the $50. Let's say that's what it's worth. It's worth exactly the damage. And therefore, mimanoshach, even if she's moichel, the guy's no worse off than he was. He's returned to pay tes some days because the e moichel legabe baal lo komasit. No, let's say she is moichel, the right to collect the ksuba. So the guy's no worse off than he was beforehand. She owes him the money for the damage. No, she didn't pay him. He's off no worse than beforehand. No. The Hashtanami Lomidi Koyovale. He's not getting anything from right now anyway. So no, maybe she won't be Marchal this. And therefore, he at least has something possibly. Somebody says, no. Sov, kol gabe baal vade mochle. No, she's definitely going to be moichlid, and therefore it's a brachal of atola. The whole transaction over here is a waste of time. The atruche beidino bichdi, and to go and trouble the basin for nothing, lo matruchino. And it doesn't pay to draw up the documents and go do the sale and do everything when we know it's essentially going to essentially not change anything because she's going to be moichlid, and therefore the guy who, even though she damaged him, he didn't pay anything for it, but he's not gaining anything from him because she's going to be moichlid. So therefore, we don't do that. But the Gemara has one last thing. Elo hod etanya, but we learned in the following braisa, this is a tosefta, the chen hi shechov lo bivalo, if the woman went and damaged her own husband, lo hivsido ksubasa. We don't make her go and sell off her ksuba to go and pay her husband. Now, why not? Am I? Tis benina nihale, let her sell the ksuba to her own husband. So, in other words, she's not selling it to him. She'll say, listen, I damaged you $50. Here's the Tovas Hanoah of the Ksuba. Maybe you'll die first and you'll have to pay me. Maybe I'll die first and you won't have to pay me. No. Tazbinino niale liksubasa lebala b'Tovas Hanoah b'ho chavola. So the $50 damages you did to a husband, let us give him the Tovas Hanoah of the Ksuba. And this way, if she dies first, nothing changed. But if he dies first, his Yarshim won't have to go pay the Ksuba. So therefore, he's being compensated, at least possibly, for the damage that she did. Because the imochla, even if she is moichalit, so legabe baal, like Pseda. So that's him. He's not losing anything. He keeps the money. So maybe we should do that. So why not? So Gemara says, no, havade Rav Meir. This definitely is Rav Meir, because we had said, as ishto, afilu sha'atzbo k'suva, it would be a bilas nus if he lived with her without this. Because here, there would be zero concern about him now divorcing her willy-nilly, because there's no financial risk to him. He doesn't have to pay anybody. If he divorces her, he keeps the money of the k'suva, because he had gotten that, the tovas hanah for the k'suba, he had gotten that. So therefore, there's no financial penalty on him to divorce. So this definitely is Rav Meir's opinion, that you can't live with a woman where there's zero financial penalty to you if you go and divorce her. So, this is Rav Meir, because now the husband would have no financial penalty, and that's why we don't make the woman, if she damages her husband, sell back to her husband, so to say, give back for the exchange for the damage that she did to her husband, the tovas hanah on a k'suba, because then Rav Meir would say, it would be, everything they'd be living together would be bilas nus, because he could just divorce her willy-nilly. Mora says, wait a second, no. The time of why did Rav Meir say, Kidei shlote kalab ein of lotzia? So, hochom negari shlo, he goes and divorces her, v'gavei le bechavolei mina. Wait a second, he was damaged. And if he wishes to, he could go divorce her. Actually, divorce her, he'll have to pay the ksuba, but then, v'gavei le bechavolei mina. But then the money that he gave her is a ksuba, he takes right back, because that will pay for the damages to him. Now, ihachi, if that's what's going on over here, hashtanami, megari shlo, if he wishes to, he could divorce her, megari le b'chavale mina. So therefore, there is no concern even for Rav Meir, because if he wishes to, he could divorce her. So why does it make it any worse if she goes and gives him the tovas hanah? So why don't we force her to give her husband the tovas hanah in this situation? So the Gemara says, no, because the damage and the ksuba aren't equal the same thing. Kigon, for example, the Nafish Ksubasa, she has a very large Ksuba. And therefore, if he were to go and divorce her right now to get the damages that she had damaged him, so that was a relatively small amount. So that was $50, but a Ksuba is worth $50,000. So he's not going to go and divorce her for the $50, because it would cost him so much more. The Nafish Ksubasa, the Mishum Hao Parta, for that little bit that he would get from her for the damages, Lo Mafsid Tuva, he's not going to be willing to go and pay the full Ksuba. So therefore, that would stop him from doing this. Now the Gemara says, V'i d'nefisha ksubasa miksuba d'araisa, so no ksuba d'araisa, v'i d'och tazmin aniyah le'bechavole. So great. So let's say she's entitled to a tremendous amount of Tosefes ksuba. So let her go and sell that and pay for the damages, and that's Tovas Hanah, and she'll still retain the base 200, 100, and therefore he won't be so quick to go and divorce her. So why don't we force her to go and sell that? So Gemara says, because we're dealing with a case where she doesn't have a tremendous Tosefes Kesubah. Can go and loan a Fisha Kesubasa, Miksubah Doraisa. She doesn't have this tremendous additional amount. But nevertheless, the amount of damage that she did was only a relatively small amount. It was only 4 zuz, okay? The Mishum Arba Azuze, and to collect that 4 zuz, he would have to lo mafsid esrim v'chamisha. He doesn't want to lose the other 25 slime, which is 100 zuz. So he'll get 4 zuz, but he'll have to go and pay her 100 zuz. So in total, he'll be out 96 zuz. He's not going to be willing to do that. But the Gemara says, keep on reading that price. El Hod Tanya, if you keep on reading that price, it says, Kishem Shelo Timkor V'hitachtov, Kachlo Tafsid V'hitachtov. Just like we don't allow her to go and sell her ksuba when she's married to him, we don't allow that, as we pointed out. Kachlo Tafsid V'hitachtov. She likewise cannot lose her ksuba while she's still living with him. But if what you're saying is true, that if it was exactly the amount of the damage, so v'ha zimnim mishkach lo demafsida, she sometimes could lose the ksuba. How? V'hechidami, can go d'nefisha ksubasa miksuba deraisa. If she has this large tosefes ksuba, so then she could lose the ksuba. So why does the braisa say that she never loses a ksuba? So Amar Rabba, Rabba says, Seifa ason l'ksubas benin dechrin. This last part of the braisa that you just read, Kishem shalot timkor, hi v'hitachtov lo tafsid v'hitachtov, that's talking about a specific aspect of the ksuba called ksubas benin dichrin. Now let's just explain what the ksubas benin dichrin is. It's a very important aspect of ksuba. In those days, a man could have more than one wife. Now, in order for a father of a girl to go and give a large dowry, he wants to make sure that his children, his progeny, gets the dowry. He's giving a large amount of money. He doesn't want to see a second wife's children go and get all of that in the Yerusha eventually. He wants his dowry money to go to his legacy. So therefore, they establish something called Ksuvas Benin Dichrin, the Ksuba for the male children. And what does that mean? It means, so let's say you have the father of wife A. So he gave a very large dowry to the husband in order that he should marry his daughter. Now, the other wife, she didn't bring in such a large dowry, and then if the husband would eventually pass away, and let's say each one of the two wives had one child, so then they would split the entire Yerusha, but most of that Yerusha came from the dowry of the father of wife number one. So he doesn't want to have that split between his grandchild and somebody else's grandchild, so therefore he says, no, we're setting up what's called the Ksuba's Benin Dichrin, that's an established part of the Ksuba, that says that any dowry money that eventually goes into the inheritance will all go to the side that it came from. So it will all go to his grandson. So all of that money that's in the Ksuba, that's written into the Ksuba as Nifsei Malug, and as the Nifsei Tzom Basel, that will go down to his side of the family. And the other side will get nothing from that. So Rava tells us that the Brisa here is talking about Seifa son L'Ksuvas Benin Dichrin. V'achiton, this is where you have to understand the Brisa. Just like if she were to sell her ksuba to somebody else with tovas hana, so nevertheless, if that doesn't come to fruition, she in fact dies first, so the other person collects nothing. So we don't say, well, she gave up the ksubas bin dichrin rights. No. Then when the husband passes away after her, so the ksubas bin dichrin rights will still go. Her side, her children will still get all of the dowry that was put into her ksuba, the ksubas bin dichrin, so the woman doesn't lose it by selling the tovas and the ksuba. Why not? By taima, because zuzehu the atsua, because she was forced to do this because she was in a bad financial straits, and she had to do this in order to get some money. So too, kachmo serik ksubas labala, in the case where she damaged her husband, she has to sell the ksuba to her husband, lo evsi the ksubas bin dichrin. We don't lose the ksubas bin dichrin. That's why, my time, because zuzi hu diansua. She was forced to do this because she damaged her husband, and she had to go and pay for it. So therefore, the bottom line is, there could be cases where the woman would be forced to sell her ksuba in order to pay for the damages to her husband. So that is something, the Brisa doesn't negate that. That would only be talking about in a situation where she had a large Tosefet Ksuba, and there still would be the Mosayim or the Mana for the base Ksuba. But there are situations where she could lose her Ksuba when she damaged her husband. Okay, that's a pretty tough sugya, but let's go weiter. The Gemara now says, Lema Takanas Usha Tanoihi. Let us say that the whole Takana of Usha is actually a Machlokis Tanoim. There are some Tanoim that agree that they made the Takanas Usha, and the others say, no, we don't pass like this Takana that was made in Usha. Because the Tani Chada, we have one brisa that says, Avdei Milug, if the woman brings into the marriage an Eved Knani, this is called Avdei Milug, so Yotzin B'Shem V'Ayin Le'isha Avalo Le'ish. So the first brisa tells us that we know the din of Shem V'Ayin, that if the owner of a slave knocks out their eye or their tooth or any one of the 24 Rosh Yevarim that we've discussed in the past, so then the slave goes free. The Eved Knani is freed. Now, who is considered the owner of this slave when the woman brings it in as Nichsei Mulug? So this Eved Kenani, who's Nichsei Mulug, Avdei Mulug, so the Brisa tells us that only if the wife, the one who owns the guf of this Eved, knocks out his tooth or his eye, does the Eved go free. But if the husband, who just has the rights to use the Eved, the usufruction rights, the Kinyan Peros, so the slave would not go free in that situation. That's the first brisa. A tiny idah, but we have a second brisa that disagrees. The second brisa says, lo le'ish, lo le'isha. If the husband knocks out the shem v'ayin, the slave doesn't go free. And if the wife knocks out the shem v'ayin, the slave doesn't go free. Lo le'ish, lo le'isha. Now, there's a stira between the two brises. So the Gemara wants to suggest, savrua dekuli alma, kinyan peros, lav kinyan duftami. Everybody holds like Reish Lakish. Right, that's how we paskin. Everybody holds that Kinyan Peros is not considered like you really own the item. So they all agree that the woman is the one that really owns the Avdei Milug and not the husband who has the usufruction rights. He has the right to use the Eved Kenani. They all agree to that. Then what are they arguing about? So my lab, b'hokum ifligi. So isn't the first brisa that it says only the woman is considered the owner of this slave, and if she knocks out his eye or his tooth, he goes free. If the husband knocks it out, he doesn't. Versus the second brisa says neither of them is considered the full owner. So let us suggest my lab hakam ifli. This is what the two brises are arguing about. The man diomar leisha, the first brisa that it says that if the woman knocks out her abde malug's eye or tooth, that he goes free. They hold Leslie Takanas Usha. They hold that she does have the right to sell it, and therefore she's considered the real owner, and therefore if she knocks out the eye or the tooth, so then the slave goes free. So they do not hold, that first brisa doesn't hold for takonas usha. Nu, uman diomar, lo liish ul isha, the second brisa that says that no, the woman knocks out the eye or the tooth, the slave doesn't go free, the husband knocks out the eye or the tooth, the slave doesn't go free, they do hold isle takonas usha. They in fact hold from takonas usha, and therefore she doesn't have the right to go sell it, so therefore she's not considered the full owner. Ah, let us suggest this is the machlokes tanoim about takonas usha. Shmuel says no. In fact, there are several explanations as to why that's not true. We're not going to do all of them today. We'll save some for tomorrow. We'll do the first one or two now. So the Gemara says, lo, that's not the machlokas. In fact, the kuliyama islehe lu takonasusha. Both prices hold from takonasusha. Nu, then what's the argument between the two prices? They both hold takonasusha. So nu, ella, kan kodem takona, the first brisa was before they made takonasusha. So the brisa was an earlier brisa before they made takonasusha. The woman is allowed to go and sell the guf of the Eved Kenani, so therefore she's the true owner. Therefore, if she knocks out his iron tooth, he goes free. But the second brisa is after they made takonasusha. Oh, she's no longer considered the full owner, and therefore, lola ish, lola isha, kan liacha takonasusha. Oh, very good. Kan liacha takona. Second teretz, Yibay Yisema, Idi v'Idi li'achar takana. Both of them are after takana susha. Aye, the islu takana susha. If you hold both takana susha, so then how come there's a difference between the two brises? Ella, l'man di'omer li'isha v'lo li'ish, the first brisa, why do they say that if the woman knocks out the shein ba'ayin of the Eved Kenani, her Eved Kenani, does she go free? If you hold from takana susha, my timer, that goes in accord with what Rava said. Kid the Rava. What did Rava say? The Omer Rava, and we turn to Daf Tzadi Omer Aleph, Hektish, Chometz, Vishichrur, and as you see in the Mesorah Shas, we have this many, many other places in Shas, these three things, Hektish, Chometz, Vishichrur, which I'll explain in a moment, Machkin, Midei Shibud. They can go and uproot a prior Shibud. Now, what are we talking about? So let's look at Rashi. Rashi says Hektish. If a person says, for example, that Asa Shoro Apotiki Lebal Chovo, Reuven owes Shimon money, and he says, listen, I owe you money, here's the collateral. My Shor is going to be the Apotiki, Potei Koi. Here you're going to go collect from. Lebal Chovo, to Shimon, the one who lent him the money. And then, V'chazar Lovezeh V'gdishu Kedushas Haguf L'mizbeach. Then what does Reuven do? He's makdish this shor. Now, the shor doesn't really belong yet to Shimon. It's an apotiki. He'll be able to eventually collect from it, but it doesn't yet belong to Shimon. So this kiddushin is a valid kiddushin of kedushas haguv, and this animal can be brought on the mizbeach. It's not considered ganved. And he kia shibude de malve umutur la mizbeach ve'en bo mishum gezel. This doesn't have a din of gezel over here. He has the right. Reuven has the right to go and be makdish this shard that he made as an apotiki, and therefore bring it up on the mizbeach. The Bach changes the next word. Shekoach hektish mafkio. The hektish power is going and uprooting this prior shibud of it being an apotiki. Hoel v'lo yokoni lo mamish, because Shimon didn't really own it. It was just a collateral. It was an apotiki for his payment. And the omid legavus menu knew he would be able to collect from it if he doesn't get the loan paid back. And therefore, in this situation, Hektish is able to be mafkia this shibud. So too, we'll skip to the next Rashi, Chometz, Nochri Shehilva es Yisrael al Chemtzo. If a guy lent a yid money, and the breads that he has was the collateral, and that was set up to be the apotiki for this loan. V'lo herhinu etzlo, the mechusur guvayna, but it's not in the possession of the guy, it's still in the possession of the yid. So it's lacking being taken by the guy. If the guy had actually taken it, then the din would be different. And now, Shoya Omer HaChometz Beveitzo Sheyisrael, the Chometz is in the Jew's house, the Ein L'Nochri Olav Elo Shibud, and the Nochri only has the right to collect it eventually. There's a Shibud on it. And now, Kishabo Eiz B'Yuro, now it becomes Pesach, and that Chometz is worth nothing. And therefore, the guy doesn't have the right to go and take that because it's also Bahana, the Yid had made that he can't go and use it to pay back the guy, the Shibud that he owed to the guy. So here you see that the Chometz is also Mafkia the Shibud. And then the third case is our case of Shichwar. You go down to the next Rashi. Osa Abdu Apotiki. He made the evident Apotiki for some debt. The Shichro Halova. So he then goes and frees it. So the Eved, which was an apotiki, which wasn't yet collected, still in the possession of the original owner, he goes and frees it. So Reuven goes and frees this Eved that was the apotiki. So Meshuchra, he is in fact freed, but go over Zechovi, welcome after, and Shimon will have to go collect the debt from someplace else. So to over here, the Gemara tells us, Rav is Teretz, Hektish, Shchomitz, Shichur, Mafkin, Midei Shibud. So too, in this first Breitza, we have the woman being able to be makia this shibud. So therefore, she could, instead of giving it to her husband, she could say, no, this slave is freed, basically. And therefore, if she was mishachri him, the shichru would take effect. So therefore, she, even though you hold takana susha, she could be mishachri him. So therefore, the ownership of this evidence is still hers and hers alone, and therefore, if the woman knocks out the shein v'ayin of this Eved Kenani, so the Eved Kenani goes free. So even if the whole Tekanas Usha, nevertheless, this would take effect. So this is the answer that Rava would give to reconcile the two brises. So Gemara says, Lema de Rava Tanoihi. So we say that the statement of Rava is a machlokes Tanoim then? So Gemara says, no. The Kuli Yama is the Rava. Everybody, in fact, holds from Rava. V'hocha al-mua rabon and l'shibud de ba. So the difference between the two brises is that the Chachamim in the second brisa, through the Takanas Usha, gave even a special power that this Shibud from Takanas Usha is not going to be able to be uprooted with the normal Mafkiyin Midei Shibud of Shichur. So the second Braisa holds like Rava, but in fact says that the Takanas Usha uprooted Rava's din for this particular case, whereas the first Braisa doesn't uproot it, and that's the second teretz that we have to reconcile the two Braises. We'll stop over here. Mitzvah Shem, tomorrow we'll give a third teretz that goes all the way really to the next Mishnah, all the way at the bottom of the daf. So we'll stop over here and pick it up tomorrow. With this, we conclude today's shiur.